Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. May 5th is National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. In some tribal communities, Native American women face murder rates that are more than 10 times the national average. We're spending time today talking about the jurisdictional challenges of prosecuting crimes against Native women. We'll also talk about efforts by the Red Ribbon Skirt Society and others to raise awareness and offer support for the families of missing women. Plus, today you will hear the names of Native women from our region who have vanished or been killed. Most of those names you will not have heard before. Their crimes have not been solved. We begin the program by visiting the core of family life when the family is facing the unexplained loss of a loved one. Linda Grover is professor of American Indian Studies at the University of Minnesota Duluth. Her 2014 novel, The Road Back to Sweetgrass, received the Wordcraft Circle of Native Writers and Storytellers Fiction Award, as well as the Native Writers Circle of the Americas First Book Award. She's just released her latest novel, published by the University of Minnesota Press. It's called In the Night of Memory. In it, two girls, one named Azure Sky and the other Rainfall Dawn, are turned over to the county by their mother, Loretta. Their mother promises to return for them, but moments after the children are transferred, Loretta disappears. What follows is a tender, achingly honest look at memory, love, sorrow, and belonging. And Linda Lagarde-Grover joins us now on the phone from Duluth. Linda, thank you for making time for us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really honored to be here on the show.
Everyone in this novel is touched by grief and by loss, and much of it relates to a woman named Loretta, this mother, who has simply vanished. Tell me why this was an important theme for you to address in this novel.
Well, I've been writing about a fictional reservation in northern Minnesota, and I've been addressing issues over the last century or so in fiction. And in this book, I wanted to write about a couple of sisters who are in the foster care system. And as I was writing, it occurred to me at some point that really there's more to the story than children who are being fostered. Where are their mother and dad? What happened? How did they end up in the foster system? And so with that, then I started to think and to write a little bit more about Loretta, about their mother, and what could possibly have happened to her? Why she wasn't there? And the reason was that something that is just not, sadly, it's not all that uncommon in American Indian communities, and that she simply was, it was just unknown where she was. And it's really sad in some of these stories. I mean, sometimes when, we know the sad, tragic things that might have happened to a woman, other times we don't know exactly when or what happened, and that is the case with this mother here in this story, Loretta. So she's a very young mother when she vanishes, I suppose in her early 20s. And so the effects, though, are, they're of course just profound upon her daughters, her little girls who are small children, but also within her family and her reservation community and the urban community that many of her extended family and friends live in. So it's a very, very sad story, but at the same time, the girls experience lots of different things. They go to school, they get older, they get jobs, they do all these things, but always in the shadow of this grief.
Let's talk about point of view, because there are many different voices telling the story throughout the novel, all of them impacted in a different way. What are some of the ways you wanted to show people navigating, life in general, just those kitchen table conversations, and then this life as people move through grief and uncertainty as well? Talk a little bit about tackling those really wide variety of points of view.
One thing that Native people have that is a you know, quite a source of strength, or can be, is the extended family and community. And so lots of Native families are very, very large and have aunts and uncles and cousins who are addressed as that way. They're, you know, they're not addressed as like the fourth cousin twice removed. It's just cousin. And so to have family and to have, and many times in extended family, if you look technically, you know, people might not actually be blood relatives, but are considered and treated that way too. So that's a strength. With these two girls, having been, they themselves kind of vanished into the foster system, because once their mother signed them over to the county, nobody knew where they were. They were just placed out somewhere. And nobody knew for the, they weren't sure at what point somebody began to say, "What have you seen Loretta? Where has she been? She was going to be going into treatment for a while, into the hospital, but we haven't seen her." And so the girls then became disconnected from their community. All they had about their family is knowing that they had a mother somewhere. She'd told them she's coming back, and then knowing that they are American Indian, because they are, I guess, acknowledged that way, in not always in a positive way by their foster settings.
Right, it's never forgotten. Tell me a little bit from a craft perspective, you know, finding the voice of so many different characters. You do that so effectively, you know, to when I'm reading it, it's a completely unique character. How did you accomplish that from a craft perspective? It's really hard to do.
I'm not really sure. Some of these characters have been in my two earlier fiction books, and so they already exist in some way. And so it's important for the characters themselves to tell the story. And that's, so this is, the people in this book who are telling the story are, they're all women, and they're all people who have a different focus, I guess, of their relationship with the girls and with the family. There are certainly men in there, and there is a male relative who actually makes it possible for them to return to their family by doing some detective work and being persistent. But the voices of people are, I just kind of think about how they would tell the story, and how important it is with Native people to tell the stories and to keep a continuity going of history long ago, but history that's very recent too.
And so this is the first book that I have read of yours, so I'm coming in with not knowing these characters at all and already connecting. I'm so glad I've discovered you as an author, so the others are on order. Let's talk about memory a little bit, because Azure and Rain have this, you know, strong formative memory of their mother, which we see at the beginning of the book, and it becomes, you know, really important to them throughout their lives. And in another way that they sort of, you know, try to find their way home. Talk to us about memory and dealing with that memory, and the retelling of it throughout a lifetime.
Azure remembers a night when their mother woke them up to come and look at the northern lights out the back door, and she says in the book at the very beginning that their mother gave them a beautiful memory that Azure is not entirely sure is real. But what is important about the memory is that it's more than real, because their mother is there. So she has a very distinct impression of her mother, and how her mother looked, and you know, how she smelled, and how she spoke. So Is the memory something that started out as real and was maybe embellished by what she was longing for? And she even says, it is this, you know, I don't know if this is real or not, but this is the memory that I have chosen to keep for us. And so she shares it with her sister, Rainey, who is a person so traumatized by the separation that she does not have the strength to really function well in life. And so Rain often asks Azure to tell her again about the memory of their mother during the time of the book. Even once they become adult women, she asks her, "Well, tell the story again, and do you remember this part?" And so this part that Rainey adds then becomes part of the story. It's what they have to hold on to, and that's like the foundation of their existence, really, is that memory of their mom.
Right. And there's another point, and I'm, you know, with novels, I try not to give too much away, you know, to listeners who haven't read the book yet. And I think we can talk around this and say that there's a point when there's people in a coffee shop sharing stories about missing and murdered women. And everyone, yeah. it seems, has a memory of a woman who was either found dead or never found. And again, we're dealing with that theme of memory. We're dealing with that theme of history. Have you been part of those conversations? Do you hear? And are you, you know, how common is that for people, and everyone in the room has some sort of community or collective memory of someone who has vanished?
Well, around here and in my experience, I think, you know, when a topic like that comes up, I think just about everybody does know of somebody, or even had their own personal experience with a friend or a relative of someone who is gone, or someone who came to a really tragic, awful end. I think everybody knows of somebody. So in a situation like that where something has happened and everybody is in the coffee shop is thinking, well, you know, do you remember so-and-so? Do you remember her? Well, remember when we never saw so-and-so? I don't think that the issue of missing and murdered Native women is new, and that's really very sad also. I think it's something that has been with us for a very long time. Nowadays, you know, with the types of communication and, you know, news traveling so quickly on, you know, on the internet and, you know, things, I think there is more attention being paid to this because of that. But it is not new, and it's a tragic thing.
As you alluded to earlier, I want to talk more about the kids, because this is also a story about missing children and about people searching for their relations, for their children. Then after passage of the Indian Child Welfare Act. So that's pivotal public policy, and you could have written, you know, a courtroom drama. You could have, written this in many different ways. But what you do is you write about it from the perspective of those everyday moments and those people sitting in a circle and trying to figure out what is the next thing to do. It's not a courtroom drama. It's a human drama. Tell us about making that decision.
These girls, when they were returned to their families, there was no courtroom drama. And I think that there wasn't... Very sad, I think. There wasn't anybody who really wanted them, who was going to fight for them. And so what it took from the family was a lot of detective-type work and using kind of a web of friends, I guess, who could help, both from their tribe, you know, their reservation tribal government, and people living in the setting in Duluth here, urban people. So various people using whatever knowledge and means they had to try to make this happen, find the girls, and then, you know, and then get them back. And then, you know, another part of the story, when you were asking about the voices of people, there are a few older people who give a history in this story, because what, you know, just as we've had this really sad thing, you know, sad things like this happening for a long time, they are connected to events in history and to governmental Indian policy too. And so nothing just happens in a vacuum. There's a history to this. What happened that caused Loretta to be so vulnerable and you know, just kind of out in the open for something to happen like her vanishing? It didn't happen, you know. What led up to this wasn't what happened since she had children. It happened through experiences of generations before her. And I think that's really important to bring into this story. This, you know, we are addressing something now. We're, you know, hopefully we're able to perhaps make things better, but that it isn't sudden. It is a long history that led to this.
A If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. My guest is Linda Grover. She's the author of a new novel, among many other books. This new one is called In the Night of Memory, and she's professor of American Indian Studies at the University of Minnesota, Duluth. And Linda, as expanding on what you just said, and with your job as a professor and also an author, but then an author of fiction as well, what do you see the role of fiction in telling this ongoing story?
Well, the setting for my fiction work is, a lot of my stuff is in Duluth or sometimes down in Minneapolis or, you know, somewhere else, but also on a fictional reservation, which is very much like, you know, like my reservation, Boyce Fort, and also some in the region here, like Fond du Lac and Grand Portage especially. And I felt it was important to fictionalize things because it's, for one thing, I think fiction can be more real than nonfiction. And also, somebody who might just pick up a book to read would say, oh, well, this looks like a good novel, who might not necessarily, you know, want to read nonfiction stuff. And for me, too, I enjoy writing fiction, and it also gives me the opportunity, I think, to really tell a story through with a little bit of a barrier, a little bit of protection here, you know, between real life and the person who might pick up the book. I mean, we do have to have regard for the people who the story is about.
Let's talk for a moment, if we can, about, we talked about, you know, men in the book, and let's talk about non-Native women, because there is a woman who is, you know, she marries into the tribe, but when we first meet her and see her sort of evaluate Loretta, she behaves in a way that, she turns her head a little bit. She's sort of hoping that this, you know, as she sees it, problem doesn't land too close to her home life, let's just say. What do you think the role is of, you know, people who are maybe one or two steps removed, from the family life in looking at these relationships and moving through them in an effective way? What do you want to say about that?
Well, she had a son who was Native and from the, you know, of that community there, and she had become a person of that community too. But, you know, acting on the spur of the moment, here is the moment, what will I do? We all like to think that we ourselves would do a really, really nice thing for other people at all times. But when it comes right down to it, I mean, all of us have moments where we, you know, we just don't act in a way that maybe we would have thought the kindest and best way to do. And, you know, people are complicated in that way. You know, a very kind person might have a moment where they just, you know, make a judgment call and this is what they do. Mm. Does she regret this, you know, and you know, maybe, and sometimes people don't. And, you know, that saying, it is what it is once something has happened and the tale of, you know, the history that's ongoing, just takes a little bit of a turn there. It happens every second of every day, I guess, yeah, all over the world. So yeah, we're complicated people and we're, you know, and so some of the people in this book are complicated in that way too. Yeah.
And again, that goes back to, I think, what you said about fiction, in the sense that fiction is almost better than nonfiction, to look at those complexities hold them up to the light from all different angles. Maybe you can only really do that effectively in fiction.
Well, that's what I think in this situation too. You know, it was a difficult subject to write about, that's yeah, for sure. But at the same time, I felt that it was something that really was necessary to do in order to, you know, be of any help, both in telling the story, which is important with Native people, to have the story told and have a real understanding of the continuity of the people and the need to survive, and that not every single person is going to make it, you know, or to do well, you know, that there are people who are, you know, the trauma is just too much where they can't do this, like the little girl Rain, who is changed, you know, permanently by the separation. Mm.
The book is called In the Night of Memory. And Linda, now that I have discovered you, what should I read next of yours? And now that I've started in the place that I've started, where should I go next?
Well,
give me my reading list.
I have two fiction books that are connected to this story, and one is called The Dance Boots, and the other is called The Road Back to Sweetgrass. And I've got a book of essays called Onigamacing and a book of poetry called The Sky Watched. I think that my fiction stuff, well, everything I read is connected, and my fiction stuff, too, is connected to that fictional reservation and to the people in it. And telling the story of lives and lives that are, you know, individual and community collective lives against the backdrop of historical events and of federal and state Indian policies. It sounds kind of dry, but with fiction, I think that also gives me the opportunity to enjoy what I'm doing with it.
Yeah. Listeners can trust me, it's not dry at all. Beautifully written. Thank you so much for being here with us today. It's been such a pleasure to talk with you.
Okay, thank you so much, Lori.